This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 16th, 2018. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter today, standing in for Tom Orvara Williams. Our editors this week are Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Gannaway. And I'm joined by our three readers this week, Lynn Parker.
Hello.
John Reagan.
Hello there.
And Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Well, first, our regular notice is if you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with your recording you have received from us, please telephone Mary Davis 023 8027 3473. That's 023 8027 3473. When you finish listening to the recording, please put the memory stick in the yellow envelope. Also put your address label inside the envelope and pop it back into the post. No stamp required. Thank you. And just to remind you, you can use the buttons on your box to move to and from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, which is www.winchestertalkingnews.com. You can either listen to it off the website or download the recording to listen to it later. Or you can even plug your memory stick into the USB port of your computer. The main headlines this week are bus cuts, carbon emissions and trampolining centres, would you believe? So, Lynn, could you please tell us about the first item?
Yes, bus cuts hit villages. Fleet chiefs have approved plans to cut a number of bus services around the Winchester district, making savings of more than £80,000. The figure was revealed in a document signed off by the Hampshire County Council's executive member for Environment and Transport, Councillor Rob Humby, who is also the deputy leader at Winchester City Council. Cuts include only running buses on Mondays and Thursdays instead of Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays on the 6A and 63 services from Abbots Barton and Usselbury to Winchester, running fewer buses during the day on the E1, E2 service between Eastleigh and Winchester, affecting residents using the Twyford service and running the C41 on 2 days rather than three between Basingstoke and Alresford. Changes to the 6A and 63 services are estimated to save the county's finances more than £3,000. Changes to the E1, E2 nearly £40,000 and the C41 £12,000. St Bartholomew City Councillor Rose Byrne said the move was not right. She said, "I understand that our bus services need to be commercial and it's a very problematic area with buses operating at a loss. Having said that, where you get a rural or suburban area where there are a lot of elderly people who don't drive, if the bus service is cut to such an extent that it makes it impossible, it's not right. To cut down on buses seems incredibly short-sighted." Councillor Wayne Lawton, chairman of Twyford Parish Council, expressed his concern at the decision. He said, "Any withdrawal of bus services is negative. Twyford being a village with a significant number of elderly, it does have an impact." He also expressed fears that it could mean an increase in cars on the road. City Councillor for the worthy Malcolm Prince added, "We have got to have a real commitment to buses and we have got to make them work with regularity. We must seek to think of places that are further afield and about them being served. Alresford needs its buses." Changes to the 67 service between Winchester and Petersfield will see changes set to save the council more than £21,000. As previously reported, Civic Chefs did, however, save the under threat number 46 bus between Winchester and North Baddesley, used by more than 15,000 residents a year. Following the outcome of a public consultation which highlighted the importance of the service, county leaders decided to look at their plans again. In the specific case of the number 46, given that it provides 15,358 passenger journeys a year, I am satisfied this service is well used by the community, and it is appropriate that the County Council makes a contribution to ensure that this service continues to run. The authority confirmed that the annual cost to run the number 46 bus is £40,781 and said the cost will be met by Hampshire County Council's £2 million annual bus subsidy budget. Although the service has been saved, the County Council plans to stop the trips from North Baddesley at 10 a.m. and from Winchester at 3:10 p.m.
Thank you, Lynn. John, please.
Yes, City is amongst worst for carbon. Winchester is among the worst performing districts in the country for reducing carbon emissions, according to a new report. The news comes despite emissions across the Winchester district falling in recent years. The report, produced by Winchester Climate Change Group WINAC, shows that in 2016, the district's emissions had fallen 24% relative to 2004. However, it states that since 2013, emissions from road vehicles have risen steadily and now make up 43% of the district's emissions. The report adds, Winchester District lies in the worst performing 100 of the 391 local authority areas in the UK, on the basis of their reduction in CO2 emissions since 2005. In 2016, per capita total energy in Winchester District exceeded that of five adjacent local authorities by at least 10%. Specifically, residents and businesses in Winchester District used over 50% more energy than Eastleigh Borough. WINAC Executive Director Tom Brennan said, "This report, coming hot on the heels of the recent IPCC report, indicates both the necessity and the opportunity for urgent action to reduce our emissions. This will require all of us across the community, business and public sectors, to play our part to help limit the damaging impacts of climate change. WINAC will be continuing our work to support change at a local level." As reported nationally, the urgency was emphasised by a recent Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, IPCC, report, which stated that to limit global warming to a relatively safe level, emissions of carbon dioxide need to fall by about 45% from 2010 levels by 2030. According to the report, residents in Hampshire are already seeing the damage done to crops through a lack of water, to infrastructure from flooding, and to coastal areas by the combination of storms and rising sea levels as a result of climate change. Responding, a City Council spokesman said, "Addressing CO2 emissions is a collective responsibility, and the Council is leading by example by introducing measures designed to achieve a 20% reduction by 2021. We are making good progress in reducing our carbon footprint. There is, however, more work to do. The emerging Winchester Movement strategy will identify long-term solutions to reducing traffic in the city centre. In the meantime, we've introduced a number of measures to effect change in the city centre, such as introducing Euro 6 engines on the vast majority of buses, together with a new fleet of refuse vehicles which are more environmentally friendly." Since it was published, the government has warned four Hampshire districts to improve air quality levels or face being fined, although Winchester was not among them. The four are Basingstoke, Fareham, New Forest and Rushmoor.
Thank you, John. Daphne, please.
And now an item headed Trampolining Santa's Jump for Joy in Preparation for Run. Winchester Spirit's cheerleading team have been jumping for joy at Oxygen Free Jumping to promote Naomi House and Jack's Place Southampton Santa Fun Run. Naomi House and Jack's Place teamed up with Oxygen Free Jumping in Southampton on Tuesday evening for a festive trampolining session. 50 volunteers, including the University of Winchester cheerleaders, Winchester Spirits, swapped their pom-poms for a Santa suit, hat and beard to take part in a session organised to promote the charity's Southampton Santa Fun Run. The 3K run returns to Southampton for the third year on Sunday, November the 25th from 9 a.m. at Southampton Common. Charlotte Patrick, events fundraiser at Naomi House in Sutton Scotney, said, "We always look for a fun way to promote our Santa Fun Run, and this year is no exception. The 50 bouncing Santa Clauses were a spectacle to watch, and certainly made everyone get into the festive spirit early this November. We hope they managed to catch everyone's attention." And that's accompanied by a wonderful picture of 50 young people in Santa costumes, literally in mid-leap, looking very joyful.
Thank you. Oh, dear. Yes. I wish you could see the photograph. It's very amusing. Right, a quick rundown of what follows. So we start with the death notices, then we have Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, Khalid Aziz's column, letter from Westminster, Belgarum, historical items, what's on, and lighting up times. So the death notices. Brown, Henry Leonard Brown, 1st of November 2018, aged 88 years. Findon, Len Findon, 8th of November 2018. Rove, George Rove, peacefully at home in Winchester on the 31st of October 2018, aged 91. Trasler, Kathleen Trasler, late of Oliver's Battery, died aged 90 at Sutton Manor on November the 6th, 2018. And now, Christian comment, please, Lynn.
This Christian comment is headed, "Too often we deny the reality of death." I've just returned from a week at Oxford University, a requirement for my vicar training course, which focused on bereavement and funeral ministry. It was a deeply intensive week which brought us trainees up to close to the stark, often visceral reality of death. We visited a crematorium and went behind the curtain to watch as a casket entered the furnace. We spent time at a funeral parlour where we measured up coffins and sat in the freezing cold chapels of rest. And we even caught sight, through a door left ajar, of an embalmer working on a body. We heard from Samaritans, volunteers who told of being on the phone to desperate people in the act of taking their own life. We wrote funeral sermons in response to the real-life case studies of premature deaths, imagining teenagers killed in car accidents, toddlers taken by cancer, and babies who live only a few hours. I returned home to my family feeling drained and yet somehow changed with a new awareness of the impermanence of life, that which the Christian scriptures describe as the fact that all people are like grass. The grass withers and the flowers fall, but the word of our God endures forever. Isaiah 40, verses 6 to 8. We've just marked the 100th anniversary of Armistice Day, when we remembered with gratitude the fallen flowers in Flanders fields and all those who have died in the line of duty. In our church, a uniformed soldier read out the names of men from our parish who were killed in the two world wars. And as I listened to the names, often hearing the same surname many times as whole families were obliterated, the sense of the fragility and temporariness of our species was brought home again. Despite these occasional memorial rituals, much is written about what the anthropologist Ernest Becker describes as our death-denying culture, speaking of modern society's strained relationship with mortality, which is seen in the contemporary obsession with youth and beauty, in the movement towards death rituals as celebrations of life rather than as times of mourning, and even in the rise of the funeral industry itself, with all its exorbitant associated costs, as dealing with death is professionalised and exported out of the home. Christian churches can be just as collusive in this denial of the reality of death, especially when we are too quick to wash over people's present grief and pain by talking too glibly about the Bible's promises of heaven. But the hope that Christians can offer to the living and to society at large is the belief in a God who loved us with such passion that he took on our humanity in the person of Jesus Christ, walked into death right alongside us and overcame it. As much as it is about living forever, the Christian message in this is that we don't have to be afraid in this life, that our short span on earth isn't our one chance to prove ourselves. It isn't the final word on who we are created to be. And this was written by Jemima Lewis, Ordinand, Diocese of Winchester.
Thank you, Lynn. Now we have letters to the editor, starting with John, please.
Yes, and let's begin with a brief but positive comment, headed Lucky City. Sir, Winchester is fortunate compared with many other cities. Naturally, there will be differences of political opinion, but in general, there is an impression that regardless of political party, all positively engaged in the process do wish the best for Winchester and its residents. And that cheery piece comes from Simon Lever, who lives in Juniper Close in Badger Farm in Winchester.
And now a letter from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, headed A Journey. Sir, my journey from being a Conservative councillor to becoming a Lib Dem one has been interesting and illuminating. It was circumstances within the Conservative Council group that obliged me to start the journey, and I would stress that it had nothing to do with the party's supporters I encountered over time, who have always been engaging and kind-hearted. Finding out that it was okay to remain a capitalist and still be a Lib Dem was a big help, as was their concern for individual freedoms, for transparent and inclusive democratic processes, and a focus on environmental issues, which would be occupying more of the centre stage if our horizons weren't so dominated by Brexit. It seems to me that the Lib Dem Party is a party which the Conservative Party once aspired to be, at least philosophically, in that it is a centrist political group with a social conscience. It was punished unfairly in the general election because it had put the country's interests before its own in perhaps too closely supporting the previous coalition government. Now, the Lib Dem Party has become a sanctuary for the many Labour supporters, disenchanted by that party's lurch to the left, but it can also provide a natural home for Conservative supporters, similarly disheartened by that party's increasingly right-wing tendencies and lack of a coherent philosophy. My arrival at my new political home was vindicated by the antics of the Conservative group at last week's full council meeting. Whatever they might have thought about the Lib Dem motion regarding Brexit, their manoeuvring to stifle all debate and to prevent any vote was fundamentally undemocratic. It might have seemed like a cunning ploy to tackle an inconvenient airing of the issue, but it has set a dangerous precedent. So, at least for me, there's never been a better time to join a group which puts democracy at the centre of its being. And that comes from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, Alsford and Itchen Valley, East Stratton.
And this is a letter called It's About Peace. Sir, the powerful symbolism of Chancellor Merkel and President Macron embracing at the armistice commemoration showed that the European project is really about peace and not percentages of GDP. To truly commemorate the end of the war to end all wars, Britain should take its proper place at the heart of Europe, not adopt the petulant isolationism of another world leader who didn't want to share an umbrella. And this is written by Paul Williams, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
And here's a concern about local parking issues, which comes from Chris Bullen, and Chris lives on Battery Hill. He heads his letter, A Done Deal. Sir, your front page headline feels correct to me. The 241% rise on basic residential parking permits is going to hit those without the means to afford a house with a drive or construct a parking place. A ballot in my own road was in favour by a small majority on a low response. People had to send in forms at their own expense. Most had thought that the charge for two vehicles would be around £94, increasing every year, of course. And we were given to understand that this was not the council profiting, but that permits only just covered costs. Well, this appears to be different to the latest version. The national average charge quoted would be much higher because it includes major cities such as London. Some thought it might decrease student car numbers. No chance, parents pay for their permits. I understand from neighbours that the poor response was due to a feeling that once the council have an agenda, they'll do whatever they want. As for parking near your house, we were told that a permit does not guarantee anywhere to park. In Battery Hill, for example, it's known that there is insufficient space anyway. One person near me was provided with a blue badge space, except that it's some distance from his front path and so cannot be used. Many people on low incomes have to have two vehicles to get to work so they can make ends meet. And gone are the days when one partner could afford to stay at home. Councillors approving this huge increase will, I'm sure, be able to feel secure because the charges will not affect most of the people who enable them to retain power.
And now a letter from Mr. C.E. Patchell, headed Dysfunctional. Sir, once again, the Cabinet of Winchester City Council have got their way and planning permission has been granted for the Sports and Leisure Centre at Bar End, despite many misgivings over the design. In particular, concerns have been expressed with respect to the Sports Hall, which is not a hall at all, for it is located in an area which provides access to the squash courts. I understand that, in fact, low-level partitions are to be used to form the hall. If the sports hall is to be used for indoor cricket and five-a-side football, how are walls to be formed above the low-level partitions? If netting is to be used, how is access to the two courts to be obtained? I understand that the Cabinet want competitive basketball games to go to Places Leisure Eastleigh. But basketball has fallen foul of a design fault there, in that dedicated changing facilities have not been provided for match officials. They were originally expected to use the wet changing rooms, but now they insist on the gym facilities being made available to them. I have been told that one of the leading officials in the country would be prepared to talk with Winchester about the provision for basketball in the proposed centre. But Winchester do not propose to provide dedicated changing rooms for match officials, so not much hope for progress there then. With indoor cricket, for example, where are the scorers, players and spectators to be accommodated for both courts? Where do the umpires change? There is also concern as to the area of glass surrounding the hall and how it is to be protected. It may be dated, but the sports hall at River Park is functional, whereas the proposed hall is totally dysfunctional. Another concern is the failure to provide ramp access to the main pool for use by the elderly and infirm, something that Places Leisure Eastleigh has provided. Despite all the consultations, the Cabinet have unfortunately displayed a closed mind to the design of the proposed centre. And that comes from Mr. C.E. Patchell, Cathedral View, Highcliffe, Winchester.
And here we have another look at parking. Cheap parking. Sir, we are looking at parking charges from the wrong end. Think of it as renting public land. Even with the suggested increased charge, we will be able to store half a ton of our property, a car, on public property for £50 per year. To rent the same amount of space in Winchester for business or a home would cost more than that per week. Why should the council subsidise people to rent a space for their car? What makes it even odder is that cars cause us to spend more on health and social care. Rather than being subsidised, cars should pay an extra health tax to the NHS. Cars cause us to be more obese, cause air pollution that kills us, and greenhouse gases that cause climate change. Our councils have just launched the next stage of their consultation on the movement strategy for Winchester. Please reply supporting them to reduce traffic in Winchester. Details on the Hampshire County Council website. And this is from Christine Holloway, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
And here's Liz Cooper with a letter headed Home Start Winchester, an apology. Sir, on October the 25th, you kindly printed an article about Home Start Winchester's annual quiz night, in which our sponsors were mistakenly named as Rathbones rather than Rothmans. This was an unfortunate and genuine mistake on our part, which we'd like to correct through your column, as we are extremely grateful to Rothmans Accountants, who sponsored this event for a second time. We were delighted that John and Jonathan Poulter, partners of Rothmans, were able to be with us on the night and to take part in the quiz, joining in with great enthusiasm. Without the support of companies like Rothmans, local charities such as Home Start will find it increasingly difficult to raise the funds needed every year to support our vulnerable families, and we would like to thank them again for their valuable and generous support, which is greatly appreciated by our hard-working volunteers and fundraisers. And there's a picture with that which shows some very happy winners at the annual quiz, holding bottles of champagne and sporting great big smiles, and a reminder that it was sponsored by Rothmans and not Rathbones. And that comes from Liz Cooper, who's chairman of the local Home Start.
And now a letter from the Reverend Paul Newman, headed Misunderstood. Sir, Liz Tatum's wrestling with Halloween, Chronicle, Christian Comment, November the 1st, deserves some further clarification and comment. That even many professing Christians are unaware of the misnomer of this now dominant commercial and cultural import is saddening. I fear that Liz Tatum's omission of any elucidation is such an instance. That the clue is in the title is perhaps so obvious that it goes unremarked. Halloween is conflated with elements of the following, November the 2nd, All Souls Day, solemn commemoration of the departed, inevitably trivialised by the commercially marketed faux spookiness. It is, however, regrettable that an original contraction of All Hallows' Eve, All Saints' Eve, on October the 31st, into Halloween, has been co-opted and misappropriated, eclipsing its signification and significance, both spiritual and political, for human dignity and destiny. These are arguably crystallised in an informed reading of the so-called Beatitudes in Luke chapter 6 and Matthew chapter 5. The major All Saints celebration and All Souls observance respectively are frequently transferred to the Sunday following. And that's from the Reverend Paul Newman, Cranworth Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
From Catherine Hawkins, Alsford Grove, South Wanston, Villagers Do Care. Sir, I read in the online version of the Hampshire Chronicle that villagers in South Wanston failed to turn up to a cabinet meeting held this month, Chronicle November the 8th in the Village Hall. I was unaware of it. I would have turned up had I known. The September and October Parish Council meetings were well attended by the villagers, as was the extraordinary meeting held this month. It seems unfair to read in the Hampshire Chronicle that the villagers of South Wanston don't care. I have just read the October edition of the West Devon News under City Councillor News. It was not mentioned. I did not attend the last parish council meeting, but a neighbour did, and she never mentioned that she was aware of it. The main criticism of councillors, parish, city and county is bad communication. I hope this is not yet another example of it. With the outcome of it being that it was publicised, that villagers in South Wanston don't care, I can assure you that that is far from the case. Mr. Davis said that all the items on the agenda relate to Central Winchester. I wonder why. There is currently a very active issue happening in South Wanston at the moment, and we care very much for our semi-rural environment and are fighting to keep it.
Limits to growth. Sir, after Michael Carden's clear disposal of the withering on the vine analogy of bid manager Richard Sutherland, and your unfortunate editorial echoing of it, I'd hoped that we would not have a repeat of the same trite argument that Winchester must grow. Unfortunately, Eileen Berry provides just that, garnished with additional meaningless Trumpian put-downs like negativity is a nail in a coffin. Richard Sutherland chose a biological analogy, the vine, to unconvincingly support his perpetual growth argument, but biology in all its normal manifestations refute his thinking. All natural healthy organisms limit their own growth. Unfettered growth is normally associated with cancer or plague. Getting on for 50 years after the publication of Donella Meadows' Limits to Growth, with nearly all its predictions intact, we are now in parliamentary overshoot with global warming, serious extinction and soil depletion. If Mrs. May decided that her objective was to get the UK to maximise its contribution to planetary abuse, what would she do differently from what the government already does? It is already into massive road expansion, traffic generation, airport expansion, fracking for even more fossil fuel, declining public transport, destruction of the planning system, and emasculation of the agencies of environmental protection. And yet, Theresa May has a 20-year environment plan. How is green talk squared with anti-green action? Rochefoucauld summed it up. Hypocrisy is the homage vice pays to virtue. And that impassioned letter comes from Chris Gillam, who lives in Upper High Street in Winchester.
And now a short letter from Jeff Naylor, headed Fixed Odds. Sir, a cynic might think the Chancellor had one eye on the tax revenue when deciding to delay the start of the reduction to the maximum stake at bookies' fixed odds betting terminals. It has come to something when public finances are dependent on the addiction of a lot of vulnerable people. But does the country gain by letting this continue? Has the Treasury actually crunched the numbers to weigh the financial costs of gambling's detrimental outcomes against revenue gain? And that's from Jeff Naylor, Birch Close, Cold and Common. But I do believe that the date has now been brought forward to April.
I believe it has.
So it's overtaken the letter to some extent.
We shall see.
Yes.
And here is a letter called Unaware. Sir, oh dear. Terms intended as indiscriminate abuse, such as the Tories, are okay because everybody knows what they mean. Karen Barrett in the Chronicle Letters, November the 8th. Should we smile at the opinion as a gloriously old-fashioned term reflecting blanket prejudice? Or should we see it as a bang up-to-date reflection of Twitter politics, where anyone who disagrees must be evil and their whole tribe hated? Roll on politics. Talking of which, the report of the Winchester City Council cabinet meeting in South Wanston that drew no locals is interesting. After all, no one in South Wanston knew that it was on. 2 days later, so many people wanted to attend a meeting in the South Wanston Pavilion to consider Winchester City Council plans to bully through a development on a greenfield site under the pretence of rural exception that some could not get in. Just 5 parishioners voted in favour of the plans. Had the parish known of the cabinet meeting in this village hall, an enthusiastic turnout might have occurred. Could it be that the lack of publicity had purpose? And this is from James Anderson, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
Thank you all. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you could email them, news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. And now we move on to Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which is about bus services, read by John, please.
Yeah. The editor offers this strident headline to his comment piece: More misguided cuts to bus services. The Prime Minister may have announced the end to austerity, but it doesn't appear to have reached this part of the country. We report on the cuts to bus services caused by reductions in subsidy from Hampshire County Council. Several villages across the district will see their buses reduce in number, including Oslebury, Abbots Barton, the Candover Valley and north of Aylesford. Taken on its own, each reduction may not be considered that significant, but they are important for each community, and especially for the old, the infirm and the young who depend on public transport. And they come, ironically, on the eve of the publication of the Winchester Movement Strategy on Monday, which aims to guide how we will all move around the city in the coming decades. The authorities aim to reduce dependency on the car, and yet they continue to take measures that do the opposite. It's hard to disagree with Conservative City Councillor Rose Burns, who described the cuts as incredibly short-sighted. There is currently a lack of political will to preserve these services, let alone expand them, to offer a serious alternative to the car. On one level, local politicians may be said to be doing their best in the circumstances of reduced national financial support, but they are wrong to view these services as expendable.
Thank you. And now we move on to Khalid Azizi's column. Daphne, please.
And it's headed up, For God's Sake. That's it. I have broken a promise to myself. Finally, I have posted on Facebook. I only signed up to keep track of what friends and family were up to, particularly the children, but I have been a strict observer rather than participant. Until now. I was so incensed, I felt I had to post the following. To all my Pakistani friends and relatives, what is the point of Pakistan-born Brits like me attempting to explain Pakistan and supporting highly worthwhile charities such as the LRBTI charity and Langland School in Chitral, when the country can lock up Asia Bibi in solitary confinement for 8 years on an outdated blasphemy charge? I appeal to my old Etchison school friend Imran Khan to sort this out. Otherwise, Pakistan will continue to be dismissed as a backward pariah state. Action and leadership required this day. I thought Facebook was the best way to get through to the Aziz diaspora in Pakistan, and it worked. There was instant response, and every respondent agreed with me. There's a first. At first, Pakistan's newly minted Prime Minister, Imran Khan, showed decisiveness, speaking sternly to the swivel-eyed ones, urging the permanently offended extremists to respect the rule of law, appealing to their better, ? Nature, and pointing out that lawlessness and riot on the streets harms the ordinary working man trying to earn a crust for his family. but within days, Imran appears to have caved in. He's done a U-turn. As I write, Asia Bibi has been released from jail into secure custody for her own protection. As Mrs. A pointed out with her usual unchallengeable sagacity, they might as well have kept her in jail. Apparently, she isn't allowed to leave the country. So fast-moving can events be that by the time you read this, things may have changed, but I doubt it. What kind of country cannot protect its citizens from the mob? The easy thing would have been for a state with a strong rule of law to invite Asia Bibi to come and stay. Dare I say it, a country that calls itself Christian? After all, her lawyer has been granted asylum in the Netherlands, albeit temporarily. And where is Britain in all this? A country with a rich tradition in offering sanctuary to the oppressed, dating back in living memory to the kinder transport. Or does Asia Bibi have to suffer her own personal Kristallnacht on the dusty streets of Pakistan before there is any action? Perhaps the Archbishop of Canterbury has a view, but no doubt beleaguered Justin Welby is too busy reconciling several hypocritical wings of the Church of England over issues such as gay vicars and who they can marry. Don't ask, don't tell. And, of course, paedophilia and its cover-up. But she's Catholic. Oh, all right then, where's the Pope on all this? Back in February, he pronounced Asia a martyr. I'm sure she's deeply comforted by that thought, as she awaits discovery and the inevitable brick, and probably much worse, through the window. Excuse me. Here's a clear chance to speak up for an ordinary Christian, and there is deafening silence. We expect more from our moral leaders. They should speak out on difficult subjects. They should call to order politicians like Mr. Trump, who, in pursuit of electoral success, marches his supporters to the top of the hill, but unlike the grand old Duke of York, finds he cannot march them down again as he calls for unity and cooperation. If Trump had an ounce of leadership ability, he would offer asylum to Asia and her family, but then he'd have to build a wall around them to satisfy his redneck electorate. Let's hear it for the blasphemers, real and imagined, for they shall inherit a world in chaos. At least they'll have the words to get their feelings off their chest.
Thank you, Daphne. Now we've got a letter from Westminster. Yes. Lynn, please.
Right. And this is from MP George Hollingbury, MP for the Meon Valley and Minister of State for Trade Policy. Living in a largely rural constituency obviously has many plus points, but in the 21st century, poor internet speed most certainly isn't one of them. For many Meon Valley residents, there remains too many not spots and much frustration about the cost of connecting villages and more isolated communities with superfast broadband or, in the future, full fibre. The government has recognised the need to help the rural economy and to invest more in full fibre because at the moment the UK is lagging behind many competitors with only 4% of full fibre connection available against 89% in Portugal, for example. However, the good news is that there is now a long-term plan to address this shortfall. This includes a requirement that full fibre broadband is installed for all new build homes, for example, and a new priority to connect rural areas using government investment. This strategy also means the majority of the population receiving access to 5G and the connecting of 15 million premises to full fibre broadband by 2025, with coverage across all of the UK by 2033. I think that 5G could play a vital role in allowing the best broadband speeds in rural areas because it is mobile and therefore flexible. Although short in range, it might well be possible to use 5G masts to give that access to good internet speeds in rural areas by piggybacking the full fibre into villages using 5G. There are problems that need to be overcome with expense, the major issue, particularly as digital takes over more and more services and application of the Internet of Things revolution gathers pace. Of course, 5G requires base stations and cell sites just like 4G, but those base stations, in order to handle the loads demanded by all the connected devices in homes, will need to be plentiful. Sites will also need to be identified, but churches in rural areas could well be a solution in many cases. It also has to be a joined-up approach, because without full fibre, 5G cannot work. Just think of all the videos and information moving across 5G without full fibre in 2018. Think ahead to driverless cars and other innovations, and you can see capacity issues need to be addressed. Also, if traditional or superfast broadband is replaced, that would collapse 5G. So this revolution will be held back by the need to evolve towards better digital infrastructure. However, innovation, investment by government and by business, will solve the problems. There is a plan, and there is the start of practical solutions that will help the UK compete and help the rural economy to catch up. Will there be parity between the towns and cities and rural communities when it comes to internet speeds? Not yet, but it has to happen. Why? Because just take the example of driverless cars. I don't think there's going to be much interest long term if these vehicles can only drive themselves around urban areas, but then grind to a halt as soon as a field comes into view.
Thank you, Lynn. Now, Bel Garum gives us an alternative view of the news. What's he got for us this week, John?
Well, a couple of pieces. The first is headed, Replace Leisure Centre with Outdoor Lido. What to do with the River Park Leisure Centre site once the new one opens at Bar End? People posting on the Chronicle Facebook page like the idea of a Lido and outdoor entertainment. PJ North writes, time to regenerate the whole area as an outside arena for all types of entertainment. Possibly a bandstand, paddling pool, bring back the boats on the river, new cricket pitches and pavilion, a small cafe and street vendors. Make it a place for the community of Winchester to enjoy and want to spend a good day out. And that's accompanied actually by a picture of Lymington Lido, where there are three young people about to leap into some deliciously cool-looking water, probably at the height of that lovely summer we've just enjoyed. Second piece brings back memories for some. Rather a startling headline, Hazardous Dust Storm at Reopened Theatre. And it's preceded by a clipping from the Hampshire Chronicle of 1978. This piece actually has it's a pop group gyrating and dancing around, obviously having a very good time, with the piece next to it, Hazard, a pop group from Wokingham, changed the image of Winchester's Theatre Royal when they gave the first live performance there for 55 years on Saturday night. And that's from 1978, but bang up to date. Bel Garum carries on. Oliver Gray from Twyford has sent in this cutting from the Hampshire Chronicle. He says, seeing the article about the Theatre Royal's 40th anniversary celebration last week brought back memories of the first event there in November 1978, after its lengthy closure. It was a rock concert promoted by Oliver and his wife Birgit. For some reason that he can't quite remember, the bands, Hazard and the Aliens, came from Wokingham and the gig was a sellout. He told Bel Garum, I remember that when people got up and started to dance, so much dust was churned up that it was almost impossible to see the stage. We hoped at the time it would be the first of many such events, but it wasn't to be.
Thank you, John. Right, we now have historical items, starting for 25 years ago, please, yep. Lynn.
Winchester Cathedral houses a... Oh, sorry, this is Friday, November the 12th, 1993. Winchester Cathedral houses the finest and largest indoor medieval paved area in the country. These medieval retro choir tiles, numbering approximately 13,000, are one of the greatest treasures of the cathedral. However, the years and millions of feet have taken their toll, and an urgent programme of repairs and restoration is about to commence, with the approval of both English Heritage and the Cathedral's Fabric Commission. Many of the tiles originate from 1270, but some, over the years, have been moved to allow for interment, particularly in the aisles. Some have been repaired, replaced, or copies made. Others are beyond repair. The clay tiles, a new and expensive form of decoration in medieval times, were indented with wooden stamps, glazed, and then fired for durability.
Let's move to 50 years ago, Saturday, November the 16th, 1968. Just one piece here. The Winchester Diocesan Conference gave the go-ahead on Wednesday evening for plans to set up a residential centre for young people at Longdown, near Colbury, in the New Forest. It's a joint venture with the Methodist Church, and the initial commitment of the diocese has been to guarantee a capital sum of £8,000, which will be meant from church extension funds. The total cost has been put at over £54,000, which it's anticipated will be met by grants from the Department for Education and Science, the Methodist Church, who will also provide the site, and the Anglican Church. The centre is being set up on the premise that young people are no longer seeking out the church, and therefore the church must go out to meet them in their groups, whether as a class of apprentices, office workers of a big firm, a form of school leavers, or members of a youth club.
Now, from 100 years ago, and this must have been a truly momentous item, it's Saturday, November the 16th, 1918. The announcement that an armistice has been signed was made known in Winchester by a message received at the Hampshire Chronicle office at 10:45 on Monday morning. We were indebted for the news in the first instance to the proprietors of the Southern Daily Echo, who courteously phoned through from Southampton the official message that they had received over their private wire from London. This enabled the public in Winchester to be acquainted with the welcome fact some time in advance of the telegram, which reached us over the public post office wires in the ordinary way. The words of the message ran, "Official. The armistice was signed at 5 a.m. this morning."
And 200 years ago was Saturday, November the 16th, 1818. Dispatches have been received from Captain Ross of the Isabella Discovery Ship, announcing his return from the Arctic regions and the failure of the expedition. From the account given in the daily papers, we collect that Captain Ross has satisfied himself that the sea between West Greenland and the American coast has no communication with any ocean to the north, and that, in fact, it is nothing but an island bay. Okay. Well, we now move to one or two items of what's on, things we think you might be interested in over the course of the week, next week or so. A couple of concerts, one in Romsey, Romsey Abbey. The Romsey Male Voice Choir present the famous Generations concert, featuring musical contributions from Barton Peveril Sixthom College, Soul Sessions Orchestra, Mountbatten School Senior Boys Choir, Richard Taunton Sixth Form College Choir, Romsey Abbey Primary School Choir, and the Romsey School Cantare Concert. And this is in aid of Romsey Young Carers. Winchester Cathedral, Thursday, November the 22nd. Celebrating music by the two giants of the late Baroque, contrasting contemplative prayer by the finest English composer of the late 20th century in a concert taking place in Winchester Cathedral. Winchester Music Club and musicians from the Winchester College will perform pieces by J.S. Bach, Handel and Britten. And then there's an item which is being run by the Hat Fair Project, which is the UK's longest running outdoor arts festival. It will present an innovative new project in Winchester next week. It's called the Recycled Silent Movie, and that will play at Winchester Guildhall on December the 8th and 9th. And access to that is free of charge. Well, those are our regular features, regular weekly features. Thank you all. But before we move on to the general news, I know that you, many of you, are eagerly waiting for the lighting up times for the coming week. The sun will rise at about 7:30 a.m. and it'll set at about 4:15 p.m.
Remembrance by young and old across the district. A resident at a Winchester care home has said that she spent a lot of time at the site in her teenage years as a telephonist for the British Army. Molly Allen, now 94, has been a resident of St Cross Grange for 2 years now, but worked there when she was 17 years old for the Royal Corps of Signals. Her job at the Grange involved preparing the Hampshire roads to take heavy artillery and tanks in preparation for D-Day. Molly said, "I love being here. I feel like my world has come full circle and I'm now back home again." At 17, Molly lied about her age in an application to join the army. She wanted to join due to her brothers already serving. After training in Scotland, Molly went for specialist training as a telephonist with the Royal Corps of Signals. She was then posted to St Cross Grange on St Cross Road in Winchester, which had been requisitioned by the Army. During her time at the City Post, Molly says she remembers the hard work, the dances in the evening in what is now the main lounge, and meeting her husband, who was a GPO engineer. The young and old were united over the weekend marking the 100th anniversary of the armistice that ended World War I, supposedly the war to end all wars. Schools across the district have taken part in the commemoration, often as at King's, inviting ex-servicemen in to talk about their experiences. School used the opportunity to get their children thinking and at the same time creating memorials such as the Cascading Poppies at Week Primary School. A new book has been published, Debt of Honour, Winchester City's First World War Dead, that has researched the lives of all the 459 men from Winchester who were killed in the 1418 conflict. They have no engraved memorial of their names, unlike most other towns and villages in Hampshire, including Southampton. The biographies are accompanied with a reprint of the War Services Register for Winchester, which was a written record published in 1921 of all who died. And it's published by Hobnob Press, and it costs £14.96. And there are some lovely photographs, one of Molly Allen at about the age of 17, and again at her present age. Week Primary School with the Remembrance Wave display that they made in the school grounds, and Remembrance Sunday at Holy Trinity Church in Upper Brook Street, Winchester.
Now here's a really positive piece about a flourishing local business. The headline is, "Now one of the best nationally." It's been hailed as one of the best pubs in Hampshire. And now the Wanston Arms has been recognised as amongst the best four in the UK by the Campaign for Real Ale, CAMRA. The National Pub of the Year will be announced in February. The pub in Wanston has been named one of the top four pubs in CAMRA's National Pub of the Year Awards, one of the most respected and well-known pub awards in the UK. A true community pub saved from permanent closure, the Wanston Arms serves four real ales from local breweries plus 170 gins. Ooh. It opens on Mondays for darts matches, a fish and chip van visits on Tuesdays, curries are delivered on Fridays, and a fishmonger visits on Thursdays. Folk music takes place on the second and fourth Wednesdays of the month, and it's also home to regular jazz sessions, quizzes, and a photography club. Owner and landlord Matt Todd said, "When the pub was derelict and empty, I still felt there was a need for it within the community, and I'm overawed that 3 years later, it's through to the final of the Pub of the Year competition, and the fact that what we do seems to be appealing to people beyond our little corner of Hampshire." He continues, "Since the pub reopened in April 2015, it's become a really important asset to the community. People come in, they meet up, they talk, they get involved with what we've got going on, and it's a really, really happy place to be." Pubs in the competition are selected by camera volunteers and judged on their atmosphere, decor, welcome, service, community focus, and most importantly, the quality of their beer. The Wanston Arms will be presented with an award for its achievement on December the 15th at 2 p.m. Nigel Jones, Canberra's regional director, said, "Matt and his team have created a fantastic rural village pub with a great atmosphere by shaping it around the community and its needs. They've realised that it takes something special to create a sense of real belonging so that people want to come out of their homes and back into the pub. The Wanston Arms serves excellent cask ales and is a great social environment for all. There's also a community business benefit which both emanates from and contributes to Matt's success. In these testing times for pubs, it's a real credit to them that it's so popular. This pub really deserves to go all the way in this competition." And there's a lovely picture there, again taken in the summer, I suppose, of a lovely pub with a big, great big flag outside and a host of people enjoying this lovely community centre in the sunshine.
Thank you, Daphne.
And now another item on Remembrance Day in Winchester, headed 100 Stand in Silence as City Salutes Heroes. 11 times the bells tolled. After a bugler played the last post, a 2 minute silence was observed, broken only by the hum of distant traffic, a plane on the flight path to land at Southampton Airport, and assorted toddlers wanting things and too young to know. Many hundreds gathered to pay their respects to the fallen heroes of both world wars at a special ceremony at Winchester Cathedral on Sunday. Members of the armed forces joined the Mayor, Frank Pearson, and MP Steve Brine to lay wreaths at the war memorial outside the cathedral, followed by a special service. This was no glorification of war or nationalism, just many ordinary people collectively mourning about loss and sacrifice that in Winchester alone saw 459 men give their lives between 1914 to 18. A sign of the times, but an armed policeman stood among the crowd outside the outer close.
And now we move on to something a bit more bright. A spectacular town fireworks. Only hours before Alsford Rotary Club's annual fireworks extravaganza, Guido Fawkes was discovered at the Town Swan Hotel. But not was all as it seemed. Guido was in fact an effigy constructed by Angela Graham and her team at the Swan. Shortly before 7 p.m. on Friday, Guido was placed on top of the town's fire tender, which took pride of place at the head of the usual torchlight procession from Broad Street to Albury Park. Sadly for him, Guido had been placed at the top of the bonfire prior to it being lit, and soon after he was no more. After the glare from the fire subsided, the order was given and the pyrotechnics from Payne's Wessex treated spectators to a fantastic display. The annual fireworks display and bonfire is Oldsford Rotary's biggest fundraiser, said Richard Hawkins, the club's vice president. The substantial sum of money raised by selling tickets for the event is distributed amongst various worthy causes, some at home and some overseas. And this year we received a significant donation from McCarthy and Stone, for which the club is hugely grateful. And there are photographs of Guido Fawkes and the torchlight procession.
Legosaurus display at zoo to be a world first. It's a scene you'd expect to find in Spielberg's fictional Jurassic Park rather than your local zoo. But next year, Marwell will welcome a herd of Tyrannosaurus bricks to the zoo as part of the world's first collection. The prehistoric Brickosaurs experience will feature 50 life-size sculptures built entirely from Lego. More than 2 million bricks will be used to create the interactive exhibition, with one of the highlights of the new display being the Gigantosaurus, an 8-metre-high T-Rex. The model will be the largest touring Lego brick dinosaur model ever made. Plus, the dinosaur says there'll be a few surprises to get prepared for. Commercial director Sean Manny said, "We are incredibly excited to be hosting the amazing Brickosaurs at Marwell Zoo. Building on the tremendous success of the Great Brick Safari in 2017, Brickosaurs will be a genuine world first and on a scale never before attempted with Lego. This will be a really jaw-dropping family experience with fantastic displays all over our 140-acre park. Alongside our world-class animal experiences, including our amazing new tropical house, Brickosaurs will make Marwell Zoo the must-see family day out for 2019, and we're absolutely delighted that our Marwell guests will see it first. The new display is being created by Borden-based Lego building company Bright Bricks, which says it will take their team of professional builders more than 10,000 hours to create. Brickosaurs will be included with general admission and will be on display from April the 5th until September the 1st next year. Visitors will also be able to get hands-on with a host of extra activities, including making their own creations at Brickosaur Base Camp to ensure that the day out is not a dino bore." And that's accompanied by a picture which at first sight looks like a dinosaur, but when you look at the picture very, very closely, you can see that it's incredibly intricately, carefully and brilliantly made from Lego bricks.
Daphne.
And now a little item headed heating warning. Hampshire households are urged to check their heating systems are working correctly to avoid being caught out with an unexpected breakdown when the cold weather bites. The warning comes after last year's beast from the east played havoc with people's heating systems, leaving many in the cold. To help prevent similar issues this winter, Oftec, which represents the oil heating industry, is advising homeowners to take the necessary steps now to avoid potential problems. Oftec's advice includes: purchase heating oil early to avoid the risk of prices rising later. Make sure you use a supplier who is a member of the Federation of Petroleum Suppliers, FPS. Adjust the timers on your heating controls to ensure the heating comes on when you need it to, and radiators are only on in the rooms you are using. Bleed your radiators to make sure they work efficiently. Check your oil tank is in good condition. And finally, book your boiler in for a service.
And now something a little more energetic. The annual chance to walk the Watercress line raises £15,000. A unique annual sponsored walk has raised nearly £15,000. Walk the Line gives people the chance to go along the track of the Watercress line between Ropley and Oldsford. more than 950 walkers, including children and dogs, dusted off their walking boots recently to raise over £14,750 to preserve an important part of the steam railway. Families took part in either a 3, 6 or 10 mile walk, each offering them the opportunity to experience the railway from a completely different view and enjoy a peaceful stroll in the heart of a quintessential English countryside. David Brace, Walk the Line organiser, said, "Walk the Line is a fantastic opportunity for all the family to see the Watercress Line from a different view and play an important part in securing its future. On behalf of all the staff and volunteers at the Watercress Line, I would like to say a huge thank you to everyone who took part in this year's annual walk. The money raised will go a long way to keeping Hampshire's Heritage Railway on track. The funds raised from the sponsored walk will be used to rebalance a section of 1,000 yards of track at Wanders Curve between Medstead and Foremarks and Ropley and maintain the track bed. The Mid Hampshire Railway Limited, nicknamed the Watercress Line in the early 20th century for its role in transporting the crop to London, is Hampshire's only standard gauge heritage railway. Opened on October 2, 1865 as the Alton, Alresford and Winchester Railway, it became part of British Railways until its hotly contested closure in 1973. The line and services were quickly reinstated by a dedicated preservation group, and today the Watercress Line attracts 125,000 visitors annually, with a turnover in excess of £2 million. The railway employs 50 staff and 5 engineering apprentices and is supported by over 450 volunteers, without which it could not function. It is committed to preserving Hampshire's railway heritage and maintains a fleet of steam and diesel locomotives, rolling stock and infrastructure, creating the essence of a bygone age. And there is a beautiful photograph of people walking along the railway line, which is completely covered in autumn leaves.
Claire excited to take over at Famous Gardens. A new era has begun at one of Hampshire's most famous gardens as the new director takes the helm. Claire Goddard joins Sir Harold Hillier Gardens near Romsey, replacing Wolfgang Bopp, director for 14 years, who's left for New Zealand to become head of the Botanic Gardens in Christchurch. Claire joins the gardens, having previously been instrumental in overseeing the restoration of the award-winning Victorian Garden at Norwich Cathedral. More recently, she was manager at Paines Hill Park in Surrey, considered to be one of the finest 18th century English landscape gardens. Claire, whose love of plants and flowers began as a child in Southampton, said, "I very much look forward to working alongside all the talented staff, volunteers, supporters and the public who make it the very special place that it is today. It's an honour to be joining such a prestigious organisation at this exciting stage in its development." Hillier Gardens covers 180 acres and includes 12,000 species of plants. It's home to 14 national plant collections and around 400 champion trees, more than any other collection in the UK. The garden now attracts more than 200,000 visitors a year and has more than 22,000 members. In 1977, Sir Harold Hillier left the gardens to the trusteeship of Hampshire County Council, who now run it as a charity. And there's a lovely snap with that of the Hillier Gardens at Ampfield in all their glory and a beaming Claire Goddard who looks as if she can't wait to begin her job.
Laura donates hair to Little Princess Trust. Scissor Happy residents at a Winchester care home chopped off their carer's hair for charity. Anne and Frieda, who live at the Colton Care St Catherine's View home, volunteered their assistance when carer Laura Sheldrake invited the pair to trim her hair. Laura donated her cut hair to the Little Princess Trust, which makes wigs for children and adults up to the age of 24 who lose their hair due to conditions such as cancer. She had been growing it out for over a year, but it took Anne and Frieda a few seconds to chop off a full 14 inches. Laura said, "It was really good fun and raised a lot of laughs, especially when the gardener jokingly brought out the giant shears. And Anne and Frieda seemed to really enjoy using the scissors to lop off a plait each." Laura added, "I have had family and friends who have been affected by cancer, and I wanted to do something other than just raising money. I heard about the Little Princess Trust through a friend, and after doing some research, I decided this was what I wanted to do. I knew it would be a lengthy process, excuse the pun, as I needed to grow my hair as long as possible. So I started in June 2017, and at times those 16 months have felt a lot longer. But it was absolutely worth it when I had a massive 14 inches cut off. As well as the haircut, the Specialist Dementia Home also held fundraising events that helped Laura raise £240 for the charity. Hairdresser Ali Hammond donated her time and skills to finish the job and cut Laura's hair into a short style. And there's a very funny photograph of Laura standing holding her long hair out to the side with the gardener, Alison Gaunt, with a pair of giant shears about to chop it off, and a little one of residents Frieda and Anne helping out to get rid of all that hair.
Petals from above in vigil of peace. The nave of Winchester Cathedral fell silent as many watched thousands of poppy petals fall from above. On November the 9th, as part of the church's Remembrance Day programme, 3,000 red petals were dropped from holes in the roof during a two-minute silence to remember all of those lost in the First and Second World Wars. Vice Dean and Canon Chancellor at Winchester Cathedral, Dr. Roland Ream, said, "The remembrance celebrations have gone very well so far this year. Tonight our vigil helped us look forward from the times of the end of the World War, continuing the peace that came following the toils of many. The evening commemoration began at 6 p.m. with the Vice Dean opening the special vigil after a song from the cathedral choir. And to mark peace between the two nations, the gospel was read aloud, half in English and half in German."
And here's a very brief piece which is sure to cheer up people who want to park in Winchester over Christmas. Here's the headline: "Free parking in Winchester before Christmas." Free parking will be available in Winchester city centre for shoppers and the build-up to Christmas. For 6 weeks, beginning November the 18th and ending December the 23rd, the park and ride service will also be free on Sundays.
Villagers' new fight against housing plan. Campaigners have launched a fight against plans to build affordable housing on the edge of a village. It comes after councillors in South Wanston, working with Winchester City Council, that's WCC, and the Hampshire Alliance for Rural Affordable Housing, HARAH, identified a potential site in the parish. The parish council has described the scheme as much needed and said, "Affordability of housing is a massive problem in Winchester District, and South Wanston is no exception. The continued rise of house prices has left many local people priced out of the area, so the parish council has decided to try to help. A site has been identified at Persimmon Field, also known as Goldfinch Way, but a minority of villagers have voiced their opposition to it, while the rest remain largely silent, putting the future of this much-needed scheme at risk. Now a campaign group has formed to fight against the plans, arguing, South Wanston is a village that commands considerable property prices." The Goldfinch Way Action Group said, "We are very much in danger due to the developments that are currently being discussed. Mitchell Dever is again facing an application for 12,500 homes. Kings Barton, we know, will have 800 affordable homes. Barton Stacey has empty affordable homes. And Basingstoke has had a number of development projects. The group added that amenities such as schools and medical facilities in the village would be unable to cope with an increased population, while there is just one village shop and the nearest supermarkets are unreachable by public transport. It is clear that affordable housing is not appropriate and is not supported by the group. Residents in affordable housing in South Wanston will be severely disadvantaged and set up to fail both financially and emotionally. The amenities in South Wanston are already overstretched, and further housing will exacerbate this. We all struggled to buy a first property, as did our parents. We did not all buy a four-bedroom house as a first property for £400,000. This contradicted a briefing note for South Wanston councillors published early this month, which said, additional development will help sustain local services, businesses and amenity, recreation and sporting groups. The school published admission numbers have not been reached for many years, and children are admitted from out of catchment. There is capacity for extra pupils.
Win an Aston Martin with a mega home. A couple who are raffling their dream £3 million house have thrown in a runners-up prize, a brand new Aston Martin worth £160,000. Mark and Sharon Beresford will take the runner-up to a showroom and get them to pick the Aston Martin DB11 V8 of their choice, with added extras too. Tickets for the Winner Mega Home Draw are just £25, and to make it legal, those taking part have to answer a question, the information for which is easily found online. The couple have decided to part with their six-bedroom Riverside Huff house near Ringwood because their three children have flown the nest and they want to move closer to family in Sussex. Having failed to sell it by using traditional methods, they decided to sell tickets. And to drive more sales, they wanted to tempt the public with another prize, the epitome of grand touring cars. The Aston Martin can be fully specified with body colour, interior leather and wheel designs, and optional extras up to the value of £10,000. Mark said, "We really want to sell enough tickets to be able to move house. We thought that offering a brand new Aston Martin would be a temptation that many wouldn't be able to resist. They really are iconic cars and are great to drive. We've had a fantastic response to the competition so far, with people across the world buying tickets from the Winner Mega Home website. We built the house intending to sell it, but moved in for a while and ended up living here for 12 years and raising our three children. It has a snooker room and cinema, and it is yards from the River Avon and has fishing rights. We'll certainly shed a few tears when we move, but the time is right. The winner of the house and the car can keep or sell them as they wish. It's up to them. We will pay the stamp duty and solicitor's fees with the house, and I'll take the winner of the car to the showroom so they can pick the one they want. A lot of people think this is too good to be true, but it's not. It's a genuine offer, and the odds are far better than the National Lottery. Mark was brought up in Nottingham and made his money turning around failing businesses, while his wife Sharon worked in the accountancy industry. If not enough tickets are sold, the winner will receive a high percentage of monies collected.
Ram raiders smash into village shop. Brazen thieves smash their way into a motorbike shop in a usually peaceful Hampshire village. The Ram Raiders struck at Husky Sport in Cheriton near Arlesford at around 10:30 to 10:45 p.m. on Tuesday night. They used the Land Rover to crash through the protective roll screen and glass windows before taking a number of off-road bikes. A villager, who asked not to be named, said there'd been two loud bangs and two attempts to break in. He said this morning, "I heard a bang, I went out because I thought somebody had hit my car, and I saw a Land Rover and another vehicle that was pulling a horse box, and I heard voices. They must have realised I was there, as I had a torch. I went back inside, and 10 minutes later there was an almighty crash, and I saw people taking bikes out of the shop. I called the police, and the raiders made off a little bit quick. I didn't frighten them. They were absolutely brass-necked, taking the bikes. I saw a 15 to 16-year-old in a grey tracksuit and hoodie taking a bike. They'd left the Land Rover in the middle of the road with the engine running. The police arrived about 15 to 20 minutes later. I didn't get to sleep till about 2:30 a.m. The adrenaline was running so hard. Unconfirmed reports say that the thieves got away with two Honda bikes worth approximately £6,250 and a third bike being left on the bridge near the shop, which stands on the village green in the heart of the village. Husky Sports, which has been based in the village for years, was unavailable for comment. The raid comes a week after the digger was used to smash into the Tesco Express in Springvale Road in Kingsworthy. Other local ram raids this year have included the petrol station at Westmeon Hut and Lloyds Bank in Bishop's Waltham. And there's a very dramatic picture accompanying this piece of one side of the shop totally smashed in, where the raiders have made their entry and got away with those bikes.
The station approach redevelopment in Winchester has so far cost more than £5 million, a meeting was told. The City Council has been trying to revamp the area around the train station for offices and homes for more than 3 years. The initial scheme collapsed in 2016 after councillors deemed it was too large. A second scheme is now being worked on. In response to a question from Councillor Rose Burns at full council last Wednesday evening, the portfolio holder for estates, Councillor Steve Miller, outlined the expenditure. The purchase of some of the area cost £2.4 million, procurement of the two schemes was £1.5 million, and the estimated cost of the design fees for the current scheme was £1.2 million.
School First for Heart Lifesaver. Henry Beaufort has become the first school in Winchester to install a public access defibrillator. Following 3 years of fundraising, staff from the secondary school in Eastwood Hay Road in Hairstock were able to unveil the life-saving equipment on November the 7th. It has been registered with the Southern Western Ambulance Service and is situated at the main entrance to the school on Priors Dean Road. Donations from the British Heart Foundation, the Henry Beaufort Parent Association and the Hampshire Police boosted the funds to the target amount. As part of the grant from the British Heart Foundation, the school has also been given a full CPR training kit with 10 practice dummies. Head teacher Sue Hurl said, "We are so pleased to be able to provide this equipment for the benefit of the local community as well for the school. Our community involvement is very important to us, and to be able to support local residents in this way means a great deal to the staff, students and governors of the school. Defibrillators have proven to be lifesavers on many occasions after people suffer heart attacks."
City tax freeze. Council tax for residents in Winchester is set to be frozen next year, the district's finance chief has said. City Council portfolio holder for finance, Councillor Guy Ashton, made the announcement to councillors at a meeting last week. He said, "Thanks to strong financial management by the Conservative administration and a continued focus on driving efficiency throughout the council, we are now able to meet our financial challenges without having to increase the tax burden on residents. We have worked extremely hard to strengthen the council's financial position and to generate savings and income over the past few challenging years. It's the right thing to do, and we are proud to be able to do it." This would mean that the tax charge from the City Council would remain at £138.92 for the average Band D property in 2019-20. However, details of the other charges that make up the residents' overall bill, including from Hampshire County Council and Police and Fire Services, are yet to be revealed. City Council leader, Councillor Caroline Horrell, said, "We are delivering this freeze while at the same time improving our refuse collection to include curbside glass collection, revamping our planning services, building 600 affordable homes, and making sure that our regeneration projects for the city and district become a reality."
Winners of anti-dog poo campaign. The winners of a Winchester primary school competition to promote picking up dog mess have been announced. Dog wardens from the City Council set children from schools in the district the task to create a poster that would make people clean up after their dog. Winners Emily Bird from Swanmore Primary and Jessica Innes from Durley Primary were each presented with family passes for the city's Christmas Market ice rink and Marwell Zoo by the Mayor, Councillor Frank Pearson. Councillor Pearson said, "I am very pleased that these schools have been involved in promoting responsible dog ownership and that each school has produced an excellent banner that will spread the very important message to dog owners to clean up after their dogs." The winning banners will now be put up around the Winchester district to further promote the campaign. Most people now pick up after their dogs, but there is a hard core who ignore the public health warnings. And there is a picture of the banner being held each side by Councillor Pearson and his wife, with the two winners underneath, and it says on it, "Scoop the poop, find the bin, drop it in." And it is illustrated in a way that I will leave you to imagine.
Thank you, Daphne, for that last piece. My goodness, the mind boggles. Right, that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle Extract for this week. And just another reminder that Mary Davis is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again, 023 80 27 3473. Many thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams and to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser, Jane Thomas and Sue Ganaway. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Lynn Parker.
Goodbye.
John Reagan.
Bye-bye now.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter Lydiard. Would you please put the memory stick and the address label in the wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. And goodbye.